So tonight's readings are going to be centered around the Venerable Mahakasapa, one of the great disciples of the Buddha. Do some readings from the great disciples of the Buddha, and then a few selections from the suttas as well. So starting with the introduction to the chapter on him in Great Disciples of the Buddha. Shortly before his parinibbana, the Buddha had refused to appoint a personal successor. Instead, he urged the monks to look upon the Dhamma and the Vinaya, the doctrine and the discipline, as their master. For within the teachings proclaimed during his 45-year ministry, they could find all the instructions they needed to tread the path to deliverance. Nevertheless, though the monks did not select a successor, in the period immediately following the Blessed One's demise, the community came to regard with increasing reverence one solitary elder whose person emanated a natural aura of strength and authority. This figure, whom the Pali commentaries describe as, quote, the disciple who was the Buddha's counterpart, was known as the Venerable Mahakasapa, Kasapa the Great. There were many factors that contributed to Mahakasapa's rise to preeminence in the newly orphaned Sangha. He shared with the Buddha 7 of the 32 marks of a great man and had been praised by the Master for his meditative attainments and realizations. He was the only monk with whom the Buddha had exchanged robes, a special honor. Mahakasapa possessed to the highest degree the, quote, 10 qualities that inspire confidence. He was also a model of a disciplined and austere life devoted to meditation. So it is hardly surprising that he assumed the presidency of the first council of the Sangha, which had been summoned on his urgent advice. Evidently, it was for the same reasons that, much later in China and Japan, this redoubtable elder came to be regarded as the first patriarch of Chan or Zen Buddhism. Like the two chief disciples, Sariputta and Moggallana, Mahakasapa was of Brahmin descent. Some years before the Bodhisattva's own birth, he was born in the Magadha country, in the village Mahatitta, as the son of the Brahmin Kapila and his wife Sumana Devi. He was named Pippali. His father owned 16 villages over which he ruled like a little king. So Pippali grew up in the midst of wealth and luxury. Yet already in his youth, he felt a longing to leave the worldly life behind, and hence he did not want to marry. When his parents repeatedly urged him to take a wife, he told them that he would look after them as long as they lived, but that after their deaths, he would become an ascetic. Yet they insisted again and again that he should take a wife, and thus, just to comfort his mother, he finally agreed to marry, on the condition that the girl could be found who conformed to his idea of perfection. So a little bit of a search, and they found a girl, young woman, who, at age of 16, fit that description, much to the chagrin of Pippali. Her name was Bhada Kapilani. Yet Bhada Kapilani, too, did not wish to marry. Like Pippali, she longed to live a religious life and wished to leave home as a female ascetic. Such correspondence between her aspiration and that of Pippali was not due to chance, but sprang from the strong karmic bond that they had forged in previous lives. So after trying to get around it all, Pippali found out that he was unable to kind of dissuade his parents from continuing on with the problem, even though she did not want to participate likewise. Their parents basically finagled them to get together. So Bhada was taken to Magadha, and the young couple were married. However, in accordance with their ascetic yearning, both agreed to maintain a life of celibacy. To give expression to their decision, each night they would lay a garland of flowers between them before they went to bed, resolving, if on either side the flowers wilt, we shall understand that the person on whose side they wilted had given rise to a lustful thought. At night, they lay awake all night long from fear of making bodily contact. During the day, they did not even smile at one another. As long as their parents lived, they remained aloof from worldly enjoyment, and they did not even have to look after the estate's farms. When Pipali's parents died, the couple took charge of the large property. It was then that they felt the spur that set them on the course of renunciation. So, to summarize a very long section here, they basically both became aware of being extremely sensitive to what they were doing on the farms and the lives of many creatures that were being taken through their farming practices, and they both decided to leave the farm life, leave their lives, and go forth. So they got some robes and set out like ascetic wanderers, making their aspiration, we dedicate our going forth to the arhants in the world, and left the home, left the farm life, and started walking. As they walked, and they were together, as they walked, Kasapa went ahead while Bhada followed behind him. Then the thought occurred to Kasapa, now this Bhada Kapilani follows me close behind, and she is a woman of great beauty. Some people could easily think, though they are ascetics, they still cannot live without each other. What they are doing is unseemly. If they spoil their minds by such thoughts, or even spread evil rumors, they will cause great harm to themselves. It is better that we separate. Then, when they reached a crossroads, Kasapa told her what he had been thinking and said to her, Bhada, you take one of those roads, and I shall go the other way. She replied, it is true, for ascetics a woman is an obstacle. People might suspect us of misconduct and slander us, so let us part. You go your way, and I'll go my way. Thus they parted and went their individual ways, seeking the high goal of arhantship, final deliverance from suffering. It is said that the earth, shaken by the power of their virtue, quaked and trembled, and peals of thunder came forth from the sky, and the mountains at the edge of the world system resounded. So to summarize again, particularly for Bhada Kapilani, she followed, or she went her own way and found the Buddha and formulated, she practiced for some time, for 5 years, on her own, but still within the Buddha's neighborhood, because the order of nuns didn't exist yet at that time. But for 5 years, 5 years after that, she was able to obtain ordination as a bhikkhuni. And it was not long afterward that she attained the goal of the holy life, arahantship. So the rest of the information on her is not very detailed. Short and sweet for her. She just came right to it, got right down to it when she could. So we'll continue now on Mahakasapa. Continuing our story, we shall now return to Mahakasapa. Where did he go after he had come to the crossroads? As mentioned above, when the two ascetics separated, the earth shook by the force of their act of renunciation. The Buddha perceived this trembling of the earth and knew that it meant an outstanding disciple was on the way to him. Without informing any of the monks, he set out on the road alone, walking the distance of 5 miles to meet his future pupil, an act of compassion which later was often praised. On the road between Rajagaha and Nalanda, the master sat down under a banyan tree by the Bahuputtaka shrine, waiting for his future disciple to arrive. He did not sit there like an ordinary ascetic, but displayed all the sublime glory of a Buddha. He emitted rays of light for 80 meters all around, so that the entire thicket became a single mass of light, and he manifested all of his 32 marks of a great man. When Kāsapa reached the spot, and saw the Buddha sitting there in the full splendor of an enlightened one, he thought, "This must be my master for whose sake I have gone forth." He approached the Buddha, fell at his feet, and exclaimed, "The Blessed One, Lord, is my teacher, and I am his disciple. The Blessed One, Lord, is my teacher, and I am his disciple." The enlightened one said, "Kāsapa, if anyone who does not know and see were to say to a disciple endowed with such sincerity as yourself, 'I know, I see,' his head would split. But Kāsapa, knowing, I say, 'I know.' Seeing, I say, 'I see.'" He then gave Kāsapa the following three exhortations as his first formal introduction to the Dhamma. "You should train yourself thus, Kāsapa: a keen sense of shame and fear of wrongdoing, Hiri Ottapa, shall be present in me towards seniors, novices, and those of middle status in the order. Whatever teaching I hear that is conducive to something wholesome, I shall listen with an attentive ear, examining it, reflecting on it, absorbing it with all my heart. Mindfulness of the body, linked with gladness, shall not be neglected by me. Thus should you train yourself." According to the commentary, this triple exhortation constituted Kāsapa's going forth and the higher ordination together. Then both master and disciple walked through Rajagaha. On the way, the Buddha wanted to rest and went off the road to the root of a tree. Mahākāsapa then folded his double robe in four and requested the master to sit on it, quote, "as this will be for my benefit for a long time," unquote. The Buddha sat down on Kāsapa's robe and said, "Soft is your robe of patched cloth, Kāsapa." Hearing this, Kāsapa replied, "May the Blessed One, O Lord, accept this robe of patched cloth out of compassion for me." "But Kāsapa, can you wear these hempen, worn-out rag robes of mine?" Full of joy, Kāsapa said, "Certainly, Lord, I can wear the Blessed One's rough and worn-out rag robes." This exchange of robes bestowed a great distinction on the Venerable Mahākāsapa, an honor not shared by any other disciples. It was only 7 days after his ordination and the exchange of robes that Kāsapa attained the goal he was striving for, arahantship, the mind's final liberation from defilements. Recounting this episode to Ananda at a much later time, he declared, "For 7 days, friend, I ate the alms food of the country as a debtor. Then on the eighth day, the final knowledge of arahantship arose in me." So there's a number of comments and readings here about Mahākāsapa's life, but a lot of it, particularly around his teaching or his practice, is detailed in the Kāsapa Saṅyutta section in the Saṅyutta Nikaya, and I'll be doing some readings from that in a minute, and also the Udana. So we're going to fast forward to after the period of time when the Buddha passed away, and Mahākāsapa picked up many of the duties of leadership. So he got the news of the Buddha's passing away from a wandering ascetic, and says, who told him, "The recluse Gotama passed into Nibbana a week ago. This coral tree flower I picked up from the site of his demise." Among the monks in Mahākāsapa's company, only the arahants remained calm and composed. Those who were still unliberated from the passions fell to the ground, weeping and lamenting. "Too soon has the Blessed One passed into Nibbana. Too soon has the eye of the world vanished from our sight." There was, however, one monk in the group named Subhadda, ordained in his old age, who addressed his comrades, "Enough, friends, do not grieve, do not lament, do not lament. We are well rid of the great ascetic. We were constantly troubled by his telling us, 'This is proper for you, that is improper.' Now we can do what we like, and we won't have to do what we don't like." So the Venerable Mahākāsapa didn't reply at that time, but noted that very incident when he decided to immediately pull together the first council after the Buddha's passing away. Then Venerable Mahakasapa brought to King Ajatasattu of Magadha his share of the relics. Having done so, he turned his thoughts to the preservation of the master's spiritual heritage, the Dhamma and the Vinaya. The necessity for this was plainly demonstrated to him by Subhadda's challenge of the monastic discipline and his advocacy of moral laxity. Mahakasapa took this as a warning of what the future held in store unless clear strictures were established now. If Subhadda's attitude were to spread, and there were groups of monks who shared that attitude even while the Buddha was alive, it would rapidly lead to the decline and ruin of both the Sangha and the teaching. To prevent this at the very start, Mahakasapa proposed holding a council of elders to rehearse the Dhamma and Vinaya and preserve them for posterity. As the first item of the council's proceedings, the Vinaya, the code of monastic discipline, was recited by the Venerable Upali, the leading Vinaya expert. The second item was the codification of the teachings laid down in the suttas. Here it was the Venerable Ananda who, on being questioned by Mahakasapa, recited all those texts which were later collected into the five collections, the Nikaya, of the Sutta Pitaka. Finally, some special matters concerning the Sangha were discussed. Among them, Ananda mentioned that the Buddha, shortly before his death, had permitted the abolishment of the lesser and minor rules. When Ananda was asked whether he had inquired from the Buddha what those minor rules were, he had to admit that he had neglected to do so. Now, different monks expressed various opinions about this matter in the assembly. As there was no consensus, Mahakasapa asked the assembly to consider that if they were to abolish rules arbitrarily, the lay followers and the public in general would reproach them for being in a hurry to relax discipline so soon after the master's death. Hence, Mahakasapa suggested that the rules should be preserved intact without exception, and so it was decided. Okay, so that's some excerpts on his life and the uptaking of responsibilities after the Buddha's death. Now I'll read a few short selections from the Kassapa Samyutta, the Samyutta Nikaya number 16. Okay, this is Samyutta Nikaya 16, number 1. Atsavati. Bhikkhus, this Kassapa is content with any kind of robe, and he speaks in praise of contentment with any kind of robe. And he does not engage in a wrong search in what is improper for the sake of a robe. If he does not get a robe, he is not agitated. And if he gets one, he uses it without being tied to it, uninfatuated with it, not blindly absorbed in it, seeing the danger in it, understanding the escape. Bhikkhus, this Kassapa is content with any kind of alms food, with any kind of lodging, with any kind of medicinal requisites. And if he gets them, he uses them without being tied to them, uninfatuated with them, not blindly absorbed in them, seeing the danger in them, understanding the escape. Therefore, bhikkhus, you should train yourselves thus. We will be content with any kind of robe, and we will speak in praise of contentment with any kind of robe. And we will not engage in a wrong search in what is improper for the sake of a robe. If we do not get a robe, we will not be agitated. And if we get one, we will use it without being tied to it, uninfatuated with it, not blindly absorbed in it, seeing the danger in it, understanding the escape. We will be content with any kind of alms food, with any kind of lodging, with any kind of medicinal requisites. And if we get them, we will use them without being tied to them, uninfatuated with them, not blindly absorbed in them, seeing the danger in them, understanding the escape. Thus should you train yourselves. Bhikkhus, I will exhort you by the example of Kassapa or one who is similar to Kassapa. being exhorted, you should practice accordingly. So one of many times where the Buddha upholds Mahakasapa for his fewness of needs and his ascetic practices. This one is Samyutta number 5. Thus have I heard, on one occasion, the Blessed One was dwelling at Rajagaha in the bamboo grove, the squirrel sanctuary. Then the Venerable Mahakasapa approached the Blessed One, paid homage to him, and sat down to one side. The Blessed One then said to him, "You are old now, Kasapa, and those worn-out hempen rag robes must be burdensome for you. Therefore, you should wear robes offered by householders, Kasapa, accept meals given on invitation, and dwell close to me." Kasapa's response, "For a long time, Venerable Sir, I have been a forest dweller and have spoken in praise of forest dwelling. I have been an alms food eater and have spoken in praise of eating alms food. I have been a rag robe wearer and have spoken in praise of wearing rag robes. I have been a triple robe user and have spoken in praise of using the triple robe. I have been of few wishes and have spoken in praise of fewness of wishes. I have been content and have spoken in praise of contentment. I have been secluded and have spoken in praise of solitude. I have been aloof from society and have spoken in praise of aloofness from society. I have been energetic and have spoken in praise of arousing energy." Buddha replies, "Considering what benefit, Kasapa, have you long been a forest dweller, etc., and spoken in praise of arousing energy?" "Considering two benefits, Venerable Sir. For myself, I see a pleasant dwelling in this very life, and I have compassion for later generations, thinking, may those of later generations follow my example. For when they hear, the enlightened disciples of the Buddha were for a long time forest dwellers and spoke in praise of forest dwelling, etc., and were energetic and spoke in praise of arousing energy, then they will practice accordingly, and that will lead to their welfare and happiness for a long time. Considering these two benefits, Venerable Sir, I have long been a forest dweller, etc., and have spoken in praise of arousing energy." "Good, good, Kasapa. You are practicing for the welfare and happiness of the multitude, out of compassion for the world, for the good, welfare, and happiness of devas and humans. Therefore, Kasapa, wear worn-out hempen rag robes, walk for alms, and dwell in the forest." And then kind of a last reading from the Kasapa Samyutta. Nice little interaction between he and Ananda. This is number 11 in the Kasapa Samyutta, 1611. On one occasion, the Venerable Mahakasapa was dwelling in Rajagaha in the bamboo grove, the squirrel sanctuary. Now on that occasion, the Venerable Ananda was wandering on tour in Dakinagiri together with a large sangha of bhikkhus. Now on that occasion, 30 bhikkhus, pupils of the Venerable Ananda, most of them youngsters, had given up the training and had returned to the lower life. When the Venerable Ananda had wandered on tour in Dakinagiri as long as he wanted, he came back to Rajagaha, to the bamboo grove, the squirrel sanctuary. He approached the Venerable Mahakasapa, paid homage to him, and sat down to one side. And the Venerable Mahakasapa said to him, "Friend Ananda, for how many reasons did the Blessed One lay down the rule that bhikkhus should not take meals among families in groups of more than three?" "The Blessed One laid down this rule for three reasons, Venerable Kasapa: for restraining ill-behaved persons and for the comfort of well-behaved bhikkhus, with the intention, may those of evil wishes by forming a faction not create a schism in the Sangha, and out of sympathy towards families. It is for these three reasons, Venerable Kasapa, that the Blessed One laid down this rule." "Then why, friend Ananda, are you wandering about with these young bhikkhus who are unguarded in their sense faculties, immoderate in eating, and not devoted to wakefulness? One would think you were wandering about trampling on crops. One would think you were wandering about destroying families. Your retinue is breaking apart, friend Ananda. Your young followers are slipping away. But still, this youngster does not know his measure. Ananda responds, gray hairs are growing on my head, Venerable Kassapa. Can't we escape being called a youngster by the Venerable Maha Kassapa? So it was just kind of a nice, the sutta goes on a bit, but a nice example of sort of their kind of caring but teasing relationship, Kassapa's encounter or enjoindering Venerable Ananda, referring to him as a youngster when he's clearly quite a bit older. So you kind of get the idea his personality, a little bit on the grumpy side, but he was very dedicated to the ascetic practice and keeping it as an example, even when he could have, on the Buddha's invitation, taken up a bit more comfort than he was, just to help set that example. Okay, now I'll do another reading from the suttas regarding Maha Kassapa. This one is from the Udana. It has kind of a nice interaction, again, with Sakka. So this is the Udana 3.7, and it's just entitled Kassapa. Thus have I heard, at one time the Lord was staying near Rajagaha in the bamboo wood at the squirrel's feeding place. On that occasion, the Venerable Maha Kassapa was staying in the Pippali cave, obviously named after his lay name, sitting cross-legged for 7 days, having attained a certain state of concentration. Then, at the end of those 7 days, Venerable Maha Kassapa emerged from that concentration. After emerging, the Venerable Maha Kassapa thought, what if I should enter Rajagaha for alms food? At that time, 500 devatas were busily preparing alms food for the Venerable Maha Kassapa. But having refused the offerings of those 500 devatas with the Venerable Maha Kassapa, robed himself in the forenoon and taking his bowl and outer cloak, entered Rajagaha for alms food. On that occasion, Sakka, the ruler of the devas, wishing to give alms food to the Venerable Maha Kassapa, assumed the appearance of a weaver weaving at a loom, while Suja, the Asura maiden, filled the shuttle. Now, the Venerable Maha Kassapa, walking for alms food in Rajagaha on an uninterrupted alms round, came to the dwelling of Sakka, the ruler of the devas. Seeing the Venerable Maha Kassapa coming from afar, Sakka, the ruler of the devas, came out of the house and went to meet him. Taking the bowl from his hand and going into the house, he took boiled rice from a pot, filled the bowl, and gave it to the Venerable Maha Kassapa. And this alms food included various kinds of curry, various kinds of sauce, curry of various kinds of excellent tastes and flavors. Then the Venerable Maha Kassapa thought, who is this being who has such supernormal potency and power? Then the Venerable Maha Kassapa thought, is it not Sakka, the ruler of the devas? Realizing it was, he said, this is your doing, Kosya, which is a clan's name. Do not do such a thing again. Because he interrupted his alms round. He was an alms round trying to use that practice just to receive food from many people on alms round. And Sakka replies, we too need merit, revered Kassapa. We too should make merit. Then Sakka, the ruler of the devas, having prostrated himself to the Venerable Maha Kassapa, keeping his right side towards him, rose into the sky. While suspended in the sky, 3 times he uttered this inspired utterance. Ah, the best almsgiving, on Kassapa alms is well donated. The Lord, with divine hearing, purified and surpassing that of humans, heard Sakka, the ruler of the devas, suspended in the sky, uttering 3 times this inspired utterance. Then, on realizing its significance, the Lord uttered on that occasion this inspired utterance. The devas hold dear such a bhikkhu who collects his food on alms round. self-sufficient, supporting no other, who is calm and ever mindful. So in this case, the Buddha agreed with Sakya and his right to give alms food to someone he admired. And lastly, I'm going to read some parts of Venerable Mahakasapa's verses from the Theragata. It's quite long, I'm just going to do some selections, not the whole thing at this point. This, obviously, as I'm reading it, you'll see it gives another side to him too. One shouldn't go about surrounded, revered by a company. One gets distracted. Concentration is hard to gain. Fellowship with many people is painful. Seeing this, one shouldn't approve of a company. A sage shouldn't visit families. One gets distracted. Concentration is hard to gain. He's eager and greedy for flavors, whoever misses the goal that brings bliss. They know it's a bog, the reverence and veneration of families, a subtle arrow, hard to extract. Offerings are hard for a worthless man to let go. Coming down from my dwelling place, I entered the city for alms. Stood courteously next to a leper eating his meal. He, with his rotting hand, tossed me a morsel of food, and as the morsel was dropping, a finger fell off right there. Sitting next to a wall, I ate the morsel of food, and neither while eating it nor having eaten did I feel any disgust. Whoever has mastered leftover scraps for food, smelly urine for medicine, the foot of a tree for a dwelling, cast off rags for robes, he is a man of the four directions. Where some are exhausted climbing the mountain, there the awakened one's heir, mindful, alert, buoyed by his psychic power, Kasapa climbs. Returning from his alms round, climbing the peak, Kasapa meditates with no clinging, having abandoned terror and fear. Returning from his alms round, climbing the peak, Kasapa meditates with no clinging, unbound, among those who burn. Returning from his alms round, climbing the peak, Kasapa meditates with no clinging, effluent free, his task done. Spread with garlands of vines, places delighting the mind, resounding with elephants, appealing. Those rocky crags refresh me. The color of blue dark clouds, glistening, cooled with the waters of clear flowing streams, covered with ladybugs. Those rocky crags refresh me. Like the peaks of blue dark clouds, like excellent peaked roof buildings, resounding with tuskers, appealing. Those rocky crags refresh me. Their lovely surfaces wet with rain, mountains frequented by seers, and echoing with peacocks. Those rocky crags refresh me. This is enough for me, desiring to meditate, resolute, mindful. Enough for me, desiring the goal, resolute, a monk. Enough for me, desiring comfort, resolute, trained. Enough for me, desiring my duty, resolute, such. Flax flower blue like the sky, covered over with clouds, filled with flocks of various birds. Those rocky crags refresh me. Uncrowded by householders, frequented by herds of deer, filled with flocks of various birds. Those rocky crags refresh me. With clear waters and massive boulders, frequented by monkeys and deer, covered with moss and water weeds. Those rocky crags refresh me. There is no such pleasure for me in the music of a five-piece band as there is when my mind is at one, seeing the Dhamma aright. Simply by flapping the mouth, one doesn't see even oneself. One goes around stiff-necked, thinking, I'm better than they. Not better, he thinks himself better, the fool. The wise don't praise him, the stiff-necked man. But whoever isn't stirred by the modes of I'm better, not better, I'm worse, I'm like that, one who's discerning, who acts as he says, well-centered in virtues, committed to tranquility of awareness, he is the one the wise would praise. One with no respect for his fellows in the holy life is as far from true Dhamma as the earth from the sky. But those whose sense of shame and compunction are always rightly established, they have flourished in the holy life. For them, there's no further becoming. A monk conceited and vain, even though clad in a robe of cast-off rags, like a monkey in a lion's skin, doesn't shine because of it. But a monk not conceited or vain, masterful, his faculties restrained, shines because of his robe of cast-off rags, like a lion in the cleft of a mountain. Okay, we'll leave it there for the readings for tonight. Have a few minutes if there's some questions or comments on. Okay.
Yes, I'm done. In the middle reading, in the Kassapa Sutta, I think, where the Buddha was offering him the better robes and food and to be closer to him.
Right.
Was he testing Kassapa there?
Hard to know what his motive was, but to me, actually, I think it was the Buddha just out of compassion, you know, saying, hey, you're getting old, you know, you've done your bit.
He was just like, I'm good.
Yeah, and Kassapa was saying, okay, no, I'm still up for this. It still makes me feel good, and it sets a good example. But it's not, you know, one doesn't know exactly what the Buddha was thinking from that.
One of the instructions to Mahakasapa was mindfulness of the body linked with gladness. I was wondering if you have any instructions on linking mindfulness of the body with gladness or a secondary object in general.
It's an interesting way that the Buddha instructed him. One could speculate the motive behind that was so that, you know, maybe Mahakasapa wouldn't get too absorbed in, you know, the foulness of the body in a way that resulted in, you know, aversion, so that kind of linking contemplation of the body, which can sometimes be, you know, fairly, you know, like the Asubha practices, but also linking that and pointing out that there's a lot of gladness or pamoja, joy. I'm not sure what the Pali is, but that's possibly what it was. In the contemplation of the body, so that one picks it up with a sense that it can be quite pleasurable and not just as a counterpart to like sensuality. That's only a speculation on my part, but it's what comes to my mind. Limpa, any thoughts about that?
Yeah, basically that's what I would say. I mean, there's no specific thing that one does, but it's more like an attitude, so that rather than the attitude say like the contemplation of the unattractive nature of the body, or to be too analytical, but setting sort of the mood, the tone, the more relaxing, more gladdening, more easeful, making it quite conscious. So I think it's yeah, I mean, it's good to sort of recognize that meditation, you can experience the pleasant and enjoyable.
In fact, that's one of the key components of living the holy life is substituting those more, coarse forms of sensual pleasure, substituting it with the pleasures the more refined pleasure that comes from meditation, using that to gladden the mind as your refuge. kind of reminds me too of the, you know, at one point in the time, the Buddha had instructed, done some instruction on the contemplation of the unattractive nature of the body, and then went away for the rains retreat, and the monks and nuns took it a bit too vigorously and seriously and with a negative mind and started killing themselves and having other people off them, and just out of sheer disgust with having a human body. And the Buddha coming back and, you know, noticing that the Sangha is somewhat diminished in size, what happened? and he was told what happened. And so it was at that point that he delivered the Anapanasati Sutta on mindfulness of breathing as a reasonable alternative, or as a, at least a counterbalance. He didn't say don't do, you know, the Asubha practices anymore, but he just realized that he needed to offer some sort of practice that was also, you know, safe but pleasurable. You know. Okay, 6:46. Take a break and come back for puja at 7:00.